All right, I think we're going to get started. My name is Yesenia Darrigan, and I have the pleasure of introducing our next speaker, Margaret Rava. And this little discussion is called Anarchism and Post-Anarchism in Brazil. For those of you that don't know, Margaret Rava is a professor in the Department of History. Can everyone hear me? Yes? Louder? No? Okay.
It's better with or without?
With or without?
With.
Margaret Rago is professor in the Department of History of the State University of Campinas since 1985 in São Paulo, Brazil. She is currently a Fulbright visiting professor at Columbia University, where she lectures on the history of anarchism in Brazil and the impact of feminism on Brazilian society and patriarchal culture. She has been an anarchist and feminist activist since the 80s. And before that, she was an activist in the student movement that played an important role in the fight against the military dictatorship in Brazil, which lasted from 1964 to 1985. Margaret was also the director of the Edgar Lewin Roth Archive at UNICAMP from 1999 to 2000. This archive started in the mid-1970s with a collection of the works of Edgar Lewin Roth, one of the most important anarchists in the history of the Brazilian working class movement. He was also one of the founders of the Centro de Cultura Social in São Paulo, a space for the development of anarchist ideas and practices, especially among young people. This space was created in 1933 and continues to exist to this day. Regarding Margaret's research on anarchism and feminism, Foucault and Deleuze have been particularly inspiring, and these influences are reflected in her rather impressive list of published books and articles. For example, Margaret wrote the biography of the Italian Uruguayan anarchist Luci Fabbri that was translated into Spanish and Italian. She's also written the following titles, and bear with me, some of them are in Portuguese, and I'll try my best. Anarquismo e Feminismo no Brasil, Anarchism and Feminism in Brazil, Os Prazeres da Noite, Prostituição e Códigos da Sexualidade Feminina em São Paulo, Pleasures of the Night, Prostitution and Codes of Female Sexuality in Brazil, Do Cabaré ao Lar, A Utopia da Cidade Disciplinar, From Cabaret to the House, The Utopia of a Disciplinary City in Brazil, Foucault, Historia en Anarquismo, Foucault, Anarchism and History. She has also edited many books, most of them on Foucault's theories, including Para una vida não fascista, For a Non-Fascist Life, Figuras de Foucault, Figures of Foucault, and Imagens de Foucault et Deleuze, Resonancias Nietzscheanas, Images of Foucault and Deleuze, Nietzschean Resonances. Besides being an incredibly accomplished scholar and committed anarchist activist, Margaret is also one of my personal inspirations and is, well, unbelievably badass. Without further ado, I am honored to present to you my friend and compañera anarquista brasileira, Margaret Rava.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. Okay, can you hear me? Yeah. Okay.
Huh? Like that? A little bit closer.
Yeah. I'm not used to microphones. Even though I wish I could, because I dreamt of being a singer. My father is he died 2 years ago. He was 92, but he was a guitar player. He lived all his life playing guitar, and he played the music he composed. So, you know, I was born in such a wonderful house, and of course, so we used to listen to music all the time to sing. So, I could never imagine I would end up being an intellectual and coming to Columbia University. but I'm very happy. And I'm very happy to be here with you, and that you're interested in knowing a little bit of anarchism in Brazil. So, I'll have some. Talk for you divided into, I think, two sessions. The first one will be a historical one, and I'll be talking on the two moments of Brazilian history of anarchism. And the second one, I would like to talk a little bit about the political and philosophical shifts, I think, that anarchism has undergone. I'm talking from Brazil, of course, but I don't think it's only in Brazil. I think it's something that is happening transnationally, and since we are connecting, and we are connecting it to the French philosophy, so I'd like to talk a little bit about it to you. the way we are thinking about anarchism. So the first part, the historical part, well, like in the United States and in many other countries in Latin America, for instance, Argentina, anarchism starts with the immigration, European immigration, at the end of the 19th century, when the Brazilian political elite decided that they didn't want to have black people in the working class. So after the abolition of the slavery, they decided that they should whiten the population, bringing Europeans to work in the factories that started to be born in the country. So that's how the working class, European working class started in Brazil, bringing, but what they couldn't imagine is that they would bring anarchist ideas. Of course, not only anarchists, socialists too. Even though they weren't so many, they were, how do you say, noisy enough and strong enough to produce many strikes, boycotts, forms of challenging the industrialist power and the forms of control inside the factories and outside of it. So this is the first moment of intense fight of anarchists in Brazil. And I would say that it's also interesting that you don't have only men. Because in general, when you're studying the history of anarchism and in the history of the working class and anarchism inside the working class, you hear of men, many men. And but it is interesting because this moment of industrialization is also a moment where women have a strong participation, because these factories were factories of clothes, you know, and they demanded female work. So, and also they considered that women were easier, they were very young, and they were easier to control, to discipline. So many of the when you look at the files of the police, when you look at these documents of the beginnings of the 20th century, you see the who were the undesirable, these anarchist people that were arrested because they were doing such a mess inside the factories or striking and so on. You get astonished because many of them are girls of 15, 16 years old, 17 years, so young, Italian, Portuguese, Spanish, and also men, not only women. So it's interesting that they have a press at this moment. They have many newspapers. And when I started reading these newspapers, my first contact with anarchism was in the beginning of 1980. We say that I entered university when I was 10. I'm kidding, of course. And but in 1980, I had this contact with the anarchist press, and I was surprised because you had all these articles talking about the strikes, and they're going to be held in São Paulo, and all these movements inside the factories. They were calling the workers to stop working, to destroy the tools of the instruments of work, to delay, to do boycott, to say sabotage, boycott, sabotage, and direct action, and against the boss. But it is interesting that in this newspaper, beside these articles, you have some articles saying, like, women should have pleasure. What about sexual pleasure? So I was really surprised because I couldn't expect reading this kind of issues next to those talking about strikes and political movements and direct action, political direct action. So, well, this is a movement that is very interesting and rich, and but it is developing in the working class neighborhoods in São Paulo, in the industrial centers like São Paulo, Rio de Janeiro, Minas Gerais, and in the south and north of the country, where industrialization starts. And before that, there was an attempt of building an anarchist experience of a community called Sicily Colony, Colonia Sicilia, Sicily, by an Italian doctor called Giovanni Rossi, so he could get some lands in the state of Paraná, which is a little bit south of São Paulo. And they came from Italy, some couples, and they decided to have this experience. And with a libertarian. Libertarian for us doesn't mean the same thing yet. Because my students told me, don't say libertarian, because libertarian in the States means it's connected to Tea Party. So in Brazil, libertarian is connected, is the same as anarchist. So so they want to have this anarchist experience of free love, of another kind of education, pedagogical experience, of autogestion. In the land. So, it was a very difficult thing. I think they had very difficult material pressures, and it lasted for 3 years before this great mass immigration of the beginning of the end of the 19th century and beginning of the 20th century. I think it's a little bit closer to the history of the United States, and as you have this brilliant, marvelous, wonderful anarchist called Emma Goldman, we also have a very wonderful, marvelous woman called Maria Lacerda de Moura. So everybody knows about Emma Goldman, and I hope you get to know Maria Lacerda de Moura. She's fantastic, but the thing is that in Brazil, we just got to know her in 1984. So, it's fantastic that we just got to know her in 1984, as we started getting to know the history of anarchism in Brazil, all because of all these stigmatizations that said that anarchism had died, that something that never succeeded at all. And so I think that anarchism was captured by this negative image constructed by liberal ideology, but also by communists. Ideology, because you know that in the world, not only in Brazil, not only in the United States, the Communist Party was founded in the 20s, in 1921, 1922. In Brazil, it's 1922. Argentina is 1921. So after the international, the third international conference from Russia, they decided to build these Communist parties around the world. This was in the beginning of the 20s. And they came and they destroyed anarchism. So they had a struggle against anarchism. And in Brazil, not only they entered the trade unions and many other places where anarchists were strong, and they expelled anarchists, and they won this fight. But also they forged, they shaped the memory, the history, and they erased anarchists from the history. So when we in Brazil got to have, you too, when we got to have a contact with a left-wing version interpretation of history, yes. So it was a left one, not the rightest one, that was this history of the heroes, anarchists were not there, not women, neither were women. But so it was only in the 70s that she mentioned this archive that I was the director of, and I think this is important because it's a moment where when we start to have the documents, the anarchist documents to write the history. So how do you write the history if you don't know where the documents are and you have no idea about these documents? So when UNICA, the university where I work, some professors had this initiative of starting to build this archive, they received all the letters, documents, newspapers from this Edgar Luinho, who was one of the founders of anarchism in Brazil. And so his family had preserved all the things, so they gave it to this archive. So which other families also gave, so that's how it started. Now it is, it started as an anarchist archive, but it is not anymore an anarchist It is an anarchist, communist, Trotskyist, socialist, and also it is not only a working class archive nowadays. It has grown a lot. But let's forget this for a moment. So the important thing is that it took a long time for us to know that history of anarchism. So for me, it was in 1980 that I got in touch with these newspapers because of the archive, because it was there. And I was writing my thesis on history. I was taking my graduate course, and I decided to, well, what are they talking about? Who are these people? I had heard a little thing about them, but a very scattered image, so a fragmented image. And I was really, really amazed, surprised, and involved, and I became fascinated, because also, and I'm telling you my story, but I realize now that it was not only my story. There were some people. It was happening with some people in the parallel, and after some time we met, you know, and we started a new movement, a new anarchist movement. But it was also in 1980, Brazil, the military dictatorship was getting to an end. So the 70s, 1970, the 70s were very important years for us, because in the beginning, it was the harshest period of our dictatorship. So many students, many people who went to these armed struggle in the cities and in the fields, died, were arrested, tortured, and they were all young people, like 20, 22, 26, you know. Lots of them were students, rich or poor, and it was a very hard moment in the country, of silence, of destruction of the public sphere, so you had no access to things. But in the second moment, like this was 70, 71, 72, 73, in 1974, things started to change fast. And in the second half of the 1970, there was a multiple movements started to be born. For instance, the feminist movement. 1975 is considered the international year of women and the birth of the second wave of feminism. So it happened in Brazil too. So the gay movement started to be born. The black movement also started to organize. And the new working class movement started to organize. And that was the time that ex-president Lula started being known all over the country as a worker, as a leader of the workers with his speeches and protests, manifestations. So this was a very interesting period in our history, and I think this was the moment when we started to have the contact with anarchism again. We hadn't yet, but we started to know that there was a history of anarchism in the country, and that anarchists not only had lost, they had lost and they had not, but the memory was shaped excluding them from history. So when I was in high school, I had no idea. Well, I had no idea we had a working class movement in the country. And also I would never hear about anarchism in high school in the 60s. So it was only in the 70s that these things started changing. And we historians started to write the history so that the other people could read what happened. So that was when I wrote my book on the history of anarchism in that period, in this first moment. Well, I think you would be much more interested in the second period, but it doesn't mean that things stopped. You know, that's why I say that anarchists were defeated, but they weren't, because they were always there. They are always there. They're not a big group, a large group, a massive movement, but they have been always there. So, and I think they will always be there. You know, we have been talking to some Argentine friends, and French, Italian, because now with globalization, we got to know anarchism all around the world. So, and here I am talking to you. So, and but some decades ago, we had no idea of what was happening with anarchist movement in other countries and in other places and groups. So now we can be much more connected than we could. We have the means to do that, and some of us are. For instance, she is a Brazilian, helping with this anarchist fair for many years. So, and well, so but the 20s are a moment of intense movement and also of decay of anarchism in the world, and communists become much more strong, much more powerful, but also they will be defeated because the 30s are decades of totalitarianism in the world. Well, you have fascism, you have Nazism, you have Getúlio Vargas in Brazil, you have everywhere. So it's the 30s and 40s, oh my God, and the 50s also. The 60s change a lot, right? And 1968 is the year around the world. And I was talking to this, Cindy invited Ashanti to come to talk at Columbia. And he was talking about the Black Panthers and his experience as one of the Black militant activists of the Black Panthers in the 60s, the end of the 60s. And then I told him, suddenly, I told him, I'm a Brazilian. And you know, and why we were doing all this, we were watching you on TV in Brazil. So we didn't know what was happening in Brazil because of the dictatorship, but we were watching what was happening in the United States on TV. We knew of the students in Berkeley, we knew of the students in Paris, in Mexico, and we know of the Black Panthers, we knew of Angela Davis, we read books by James Baldwin, and that influenced us a lot. And this is completely crazy because we didn't know what was happening inside the country, but we did know what was happening outside the country. Well, and then, so I think that the second moment, but because after, so in the 70s, we started so all movements started to be born again in Brazil, and the dictatorship being going down and being having to negotiate and to open, so and it ended in 85. So I think that in the 80s, I would say that a new anarchist movement started to be visible, to get visibility, you know. And this new movement is, and since the 80s, it has grown a lot. I would say that there are many conflicts among anarchists in Brazil. And I think maybe everywhere, I don't know. I'm afraid, wish. Because everyone says, no, you're not anarchist enough. I am the anarchist, you're not. But it happens also with feminists. They say, no, you're not feminist enough because you dye your hair and a you know? And I heard that in Brazil it happens also with Indians, indigenous population. One tell the other, no, you're not indigenous because you are wearing a watch. You have a TV set. So, these kind of things. But anyway, even though with many conflicts and very confusing things, it's not a group, a national movement, I wouldn't say that, but there are many groups, since the 80s. And differently from the beginnings of the 20th century, it's not a working class movement anymore. I think here too. It is formed by very young people. I think the oldest generation now in anarchism is me, and me and my friends, right? Because those who were older than me, for instance, 70, 80, they are all, either they are too sick or they died. So I think the last of the first generation in Brazil, Jaime Cubero, the last one, he died in 1998, and somehow it was so important to have the contact with him, because you know it's like the bridge with this classical movement, those anarchists who knew all about Bakunin, Malatesta, Proudhon, they would know Luigi Fabri, and all these very important activists of the past, and they knew so much about it. And they tried to shape their lives according to these ideas. So I think, for me, I would say it was such an energizing contact and with a moment that was dying. Because I think we belong to another moment. It's another moment of anarchism. Why is it another moment? It is not a working class movement anymore. I wouldn't say it's a middle class movement. I wouldn't use the class to classify anarchism, because I think there are many people from poor, rich, middle, up, down. So I don't think we could have this categorization as we could. As we look to anarchism in the beginnings of industrialization. And I think another difference is that this anarchism now is much more cultural in the sense that it is broader because it is not focused on strikes, on doing strikes and fighting inside the place you work or targeting the state. I think it is a cultural movement because it is, I'm talking about from my experience in Brazil, but I can talk about, because this is a fair, a book fair, right? So this is cultural. So I think it is an anarchism concerned with the whole life, with education, with the way you live, was trying to shape our lives in a different way, escaping from power relations, escaping from the fastest way of life that is here. Is here, is in Brazil, is everywhere. So that's why I think Foucault and Deleuze have been important authors for us. This I don't know how much of you know these philosophers, because not because you're ignorant, but because you're young. You're young, right? And Americans don't read much French. So it's different from Brazil. In Brazil we have. So now that I'm here for a year, I see this difference. In Brazil we have this strong French influence in our education. And it is interesting. On the other hand, we know nothing about Latin America. Brazilians think they're not Latin America. So we talk about Latin America like people who speak Spanish. And because we speak Portuguese, we think we are out of Latin America. I think we are changing nowadays this perception, because we realize that is absolutely odd. But we have a strong French influence in our formation. In the United States, you don't. So for instance, I'm teaching history at Columbia. I say, this historian from France, Michel Perrault, the students say, who? And in Brazil, everybody would say, oh, yes, of course, because her books are translated, and because we have this strong, we have a strong American influence in our lives, of course. We are absolutely Americanized. So I can buy these exact, my clothes are from Brazil, except for this, But I could buy the same clothes here. So it's all the same. We have Gap, we have everything. So we are absolutely Americanized. But our universities are not Americanized. Our universities are much more French than American. And I think this is changing. So everything I'm telling you, I think has been changing in the last 10 years. So I think we are going to have another history from the last 10 years on, coming to the press, to nowadays. I'm sorry.
I'd like to know about the landless movement, MST.
Yes.
We are in relationship with the anarchism, because as far as I know, the landless movement have been work a lot together in the same principle with the anarchism.
Which is what?
Movimento dos Trabalhadores Sem Terra.
No, you said anarchism.
Trabalhando junto com o anarquismo.
Yeah, but you said something.
Se eu pudesse dar uma ilustrada só para manter essa coisa do Brasil com o anarquismo.
So, There are many, let me just explain a little bit, that there are many anarchist groups in Brazil nowadays, and I think they have different understanding of anarchism and different practices. For instance, I would say that we could say that there are two groups. Not that they are that they are united. They are different groups, but I mean two interpretations. Let me see, two interpretations of anarchism. I would say, maybe three. I don't know, but let's take two. One considers that we have to work to change ourselves, to change our lives, to question, to challenge power relations wherever we are. It doesn't matter. You don't have to be in the factories. You don't have to live in favelas. You can be at university, for instance. You're teaching, you're a teacher. So you can practice anarchism in your daily life wherever you are. Okay? So this is one of the groups. And I would say that there is a very important group doing wonderful things in Brazil. And I would suggest that you go to Google and you type NUSOL. It's N-U, then you have a trace, underline, effect, S-O-L, NUSOL. It's a Núcleo da Sociabilidade Libertária, Center of Anarchist Libertarian Sociability. It's a group at University of, it's the Catholic University of São Paulo, but you know, this is a church, right? We're inside a church. So it's the same thing. It doesn't matter, okay? It doesn't matter being a Catholic, because this Catholic university was one of the most important during the fight against dictatorship, even though it was a Catholic. But the Catholic left is strong in the country, and it doesn't work like strictly being because it's Catholic. It's you have to be a religious. So. And this is a very strong group, and so the idea is that they are working not only in cultural activities, doing cultural activities like theater, like, I don't know, dance, like producing books, producing theory, producing theses, but I think the main investment is in changing, renewing anarchism, because anarchism got old as everything. So the classic anarchism, for instance, I don't think you can only repeat Bakunin nowadays. You know, there is a gap from this generation of the 19th century and us in the 21st century. So they're working in this renewal of anarchism. And I think this is a very difficult and important task. I'm going to talk about it in a minute, because I want to answer Adriana. And the second group thinks that you have to be an activist in the sense of working in the favelas, going to the MST, the landless workers, going to the factories, going to, okay? So it's another kind of work. So they enter these movements to spread anarchist ideas. So the idea is that, for instance, because there is in this strong movement of Brazil, the landless movement, which is a strong, you know, they in a weekend they invade like 30 farms. They occupy. So it's a very strong movement all over the country, and they are doing the agrarian reform. They are doing it. There is a revolution going on in Brazil. You know, we don't say so clearly, but everybody knows that they are really changing what the state would never do and has never done. Even the leftist, called leftist, the PT government, that was very center. But anyway, there was a dispute inside this movement, for instance, relating to education. Some people inside this movement consider that you have to form the children in a very disciplinary way. For instance, teaching the Leninism, Marxism, the class struggles, all these principles. So it's very disciplined, this movement. On the other hand, there are those who are anarchist tendencies saying, no, we cannot do the same thing. No. we have to transform pedagogical, you say pedagogical methods, instead of being authoritarian, you have to form these young generations in anarchist, in libertarian ways, in a more, how do you say, free. Give them the means to be, to understand what freedom means. And not teaching them how to obey. So obedience is the awful problem, the most awful problem of our contemporary world, because you're supposed to obey all the time. Okay, and that's why I love Foucault, because Foucault says that obedience is the strongest form of domination in the modern world. You're supposed to obey inside your family, you learn to obey your parents, then you go to school, you learn to obey your teachers, then you go to university, you learn to obey your professors, then you go to the party, you learn to obey the leaders, then you go to the... And you have to obey. And obedience means what? Means that you have to forget your own ideas, means that you have to renounce yourself, means that you have to forget your subjectivity, to be the one you're supposed to be, but who decided this one that you have? You are supposed to be. Who decided what is to be? What is to be a revolutionary? So the party, the leaders, the who. So I think this is a very interesting discussion, and so I'm going to the third part of my talk so that we can have some time to talk. And that is the philosophical part of it. So a little bit on the second, on the first moment, in the historical one. Before I go to this philosophical approach, I just wanted to give you some more information on Brazil, on Brazil anarchist movement. So there are many different movements, as I tell you. Some consider that you have to practice anarchism no matter where you are. Others think you you have to go to very poor neighborhoods, to social movements, and spread anarchism inside these movements, so this kind of activism. And of course they have some conflict with us from the universities. And this also happens with feminists. You know, many feminists look at us and say, oh, you're professors, you're full of medals, so... And we say, well, and so, because of that we can't be feminists, so we can't be anarchists. And university is not a place where you have to fight to change. It's not a place where you produce ideas, you produce knowledge, where people say that we are producing science. And what kind of science are we producing? Kind science that legitimate neoliberal world, power relations, violence, the army, and what? What are we doing? So, so we have these movements spread in Brazil, Bahia, for instance. There is this Inimigo do Rei, these people, in São Paulo, Núcleo da Sociabilidade Libertária. And we also have some editing houses, like Letra Livre, that is an editing house held by Robson Nakame, who has been an anarchist forever. There is another editing house called Imaginário, that is a very interesting one. Yes? Akame, A-C-H-A-C-H-I-A-M-E. Akame. And if you Google, yeah, if you Google, I don't know if you, because all of these groups, they have sites, and I wish I could give you.
Yeah, and if you have questions about specific
yeah,
names,
but then
you
can show. I have a paper here that with, but because I think if you Google them, you'll be, it's fantastic.
Have
you know.
All the sites there?
Some of the sites are there. Yes. Yes, of course. And because, for instance, this group of Pulki that I said they are renewing anarchism, they are called NU, so N-U, trace, dash N-U dash S-O-L. And they have online journal. They have many kinds of, not only journals, many kinds of, like folhetins, I don't know, flecheiras, I don't know, it's difficult to say this in English form, I don't know. But if you enter the site, you see many, many things. And the events, the archives, the articles. So, and they are doing such an interesting work. So this editing house, and there are many other spaces, like the one called I Carmela. The name is A Y Carmela. It's this space.
A-Y.
Huh? A-Y. A-Y, okay, A-Y Carmela. And it's a space where, like here, many young people come and they discuss anarchist ideas. They have library, they have a conference. For a moment, we had a house in the center of São Paulo. It would be like in the village here. We had a house, and it was very close to the subway, so it was easy to get there. And it was called Institute of Libertarian of Anarchist Studies. I don't know, but it was very interesting because on Saturdays there used to be like 100 young people. And we have conference lectures at 8 o'clock on Saturdays. And we were like, oh my God, what are these young people doing here at 8 o'clock on Saturdays? They should be dancing. I don't know. They want to listen about anarchism, anarchist ideas.
Where is São Paulo?
In São Paulo, in Vila Madalena. Yeah, so. It's like a village here, mm-hmm. Soho, Vila Madalena, the artistic Bohemian neighborhood. And we had this house for 3 years, and it was a fantastic experience. So there are many experiences, they come and go like that. But there are others like this Centro de Cultura Social, this cultural center, CCS. Centro de Cultura Social, CCS, that was founded in 1933, and it's still alive. So with many difficulties, problems, and so on, but it is still there. Well, so there is all this variety of groups in Rio de Janeiro. There are strong groups, very interesting, very active. And some of the groups are in São Paulo, in Rio de Janeiro, the same group, in other states, in Porto Alegre. So, but the thing is that when we want to have an international meeting, it's a disaster. I don't know.
But now they try a federation.
It's always a disaster.
Together,
I don't know what happens. You know. So every time one of the groups decides, why don't we have a national encounter? So everybody's going to meet. It's a disaster. So the only one that I went that was not a disaster was in 1992. We had a very big, it was called International Anarchist Conference. Because it was called International Libertarian Conference, but I'm afraid of saying a libertarian here in the States because of the Tea Party. So it's there came anarchists from all of the world, and that was when I met Luci Fabbri, this Italian anarchist who was at this time 92. She was 85, and I decided to write her biography. And when I concluded her biography in Montevideo, in Uruguay, she died. So I spent the last 5 years of her life. But I wanted to know what an anarchist who was born in an anarchist family, because I wasn't born in an anarchist family, she was. Her father was the biographer of Malatesta, Luigi Fabbri, in Italy, the working class movement in Italy, the beginning of the 20th century. So no, he lived with Malatesta. They had to flee because of Mussolini, because of the growth of fascism. So they came to Uruguay, where Malatesta had been. So they came, and they come from Uruguay to Argentina, Argentina to Uruguay, to Brazil, so, you know, because of the police was all the time. So I think anarchism has always been a transnational movement, right? And besides, they don't have this notion of a nation, of a national. Yes.
I can make one comment.
Yes, of course.
No, because anarchism, all the time in the beginning, was all the time international movement.
Yes.
That was national, that was local.
Yes.
I don't know, because we don't know the people here, but the anarchists in the U.S., they are very...
national.
They have very knowledge about the anarchist movement everywhere, including Brazil.
Ah, really?
And about the, this...
Because
they are anarchists. But I don't, we have, in Brazil, we have some, like Roberto Freire.
Yeah.
Some anarchists coming from the, our own groups. No? So you can talk about that, because the anarcho-syndicalism in Brazil and the movement of the people with no land, like we have here the square, not the square, I say square.
What?
Yeah, it's the same movement, different land, it's the same struggle about the land or territory. So I'd like to talk about something we don't have here, like Roberto Freire, you know.
Yeah.
And then what's happening in Brazil when you have this social forum, que started in Brazil, and all anarchism was very active in the social forum in Brazil, and through that movement, we I think...
Yeah, but for instance, the social forum was, it started in Brazil very strong, but like the left forum that I went here, It wasn't an anarchist forum. So it's different from this movement, this forum that I told you in 1992. It was exclusively anarchist. It was a forum of anarchists of the world. So from the United States came Ronald Craig, from Argentina, Chile, France, Italy. So many people around the world came to this forum. And the social forum, gathers people from socialists, PT, I don't know, many. For instance, Noam Chomsky went to talk there, but not necessarily he was supported by anarchists. He was strongly supported by the PT. And you know that anarchists are in conflict with the PT. PT is the workers' party, right? So it was a more confusing thing. And Roberto Freire, I think is he just died. So he just died. And but he was a doctor, a psychiatrist who became an anarchist, and he was also a playwright. And he was famous in the country, not because he was an anarchist, but he was a playwright, because he was a doctor coming from the elite, but a very transgressive one. And he became an anarchist, and he founded something absolutely new, the somatherapy. That is, because he was a psychiatrist, and he said, well, it's something impossible, because it's so expensive, a session on psychiatry, and who can afford a treatment like that? So that's not the thing I want to do in my life. So he decided, he said, there must be something that I could do to anybody easier, so collective work. So he decided to start this therapy with the body. So it's a psychotherapy, but with the body. Well, now it's very common. You can find it in many places. But this was 1970 when he started. 1970.
Yeah, but I forgot to talk. Here was under the militarism in Brazil.
Yes.
No, the way that he created this kind of...
Yes, so they understand that the 70s were harsh years, right? So it was absolutely important, the work he did. So I think, I don't know that if there are other groups on working with the body in with anarchist practices of the body and mind, of course, in the world. So I know only in Brazil. And one of the disciples of Roberto Freire, who is Goya, happens to be in London now. He's teaching somatherapy in London because they don't have it.
But Bakunin was his experience.
Yeah, but he didn't do this. He didn't have this psychiatry, this knowledge on psychiatry, and he didn't know how to work with the body. Because it's not only doing exercise. It's the idea is the psychotherapy, the work of psychotherapy being done with the body, and collective, collective one, and a collective one. So I think this was absolutely fantastic. And well, and this method became very famous in the country. You've got some people that have been trying to spread it in many parts inside the country and out of the country. But I would like to take 15 minutes to talk, 10 or 15 minutes, to talk about this renewal. That I mentioned of anarchism in Brazil. I don't think it's only that's something that is only happening in Brazil, as I told you, because for instance, next month Todd May is going to talk at a New School with Judith Butler. They're going to talk on anarchism and feminism. So I don't think this is happening only in Brazil, this kind of questions they are putting. So
Emma Goldman. Emma Goldman was a great feminist, anarchist.
Yes. As Maria Lacerda de Moura, I told them here. But no, but that's not the question. The question is that anarchism has not been open to feminism. There are some important, in my opinion, there are many important, many no. There are some important anarchists, female anarchists, like Emma Goldman, like Maria Lacerda de Moura, like anonymous ones, because it was a working class movement. So there are many, many women that I know the nickname. I don't know the name, but I know the nickname, because they signed like TV. So you know the nickname. So there are many, and we are doing this history of finding who were the anarchist women. But that doesn't mean that anarchism has been open to feminism. So it's not enough to say that we have some women that were very important in anarchism. I think anarchism, for me, has to think about it, about itself as a movement, and transform it, renew it. That's why I would like to talk about renewal, because we live in a different world where women have much more space. And we and the fight and the struggle to for women's rights is very strong in the world. So it's the first time we have a woman as a president in Brazil, a leftist woman. It's not Sarah Palin. I think, yeah, it should be noticed. It's not Sarah Palin. She's a very important and strong woman who was tortured, was in prison. She's not an anarchist, but she is much closer to ideas of challenging power and fighting for women's rights. And I think that anarchism has to face this discussion that feminism has brought, because feminism is absolutely successful. So if something did succeed in the 20th and 21st century, it's feminism. So it's not Margaret Hussein. But you can read a famous historian like Hobsbawm, who is not an anarchist and not a feminist, and he says that in his book, The Era of Extremes. And he's talking about the world. He says, well, all the revolutions failed, but the feminist ones succeeded. It is true. Look at women in our world, even though we have much to conquer, of course, I know that. And I think that feminism should be open to these new trends that we find in our world, you know? And that was not on the horizon of the classic anarchism, because they can talk about everything, and they lived in another century, another moment, they had different questions. They didn't have the internet. So, and capitalism has become much more sophisticated. The forms of control are much more sophisticated. They are violent, but they are also seductive. So you go to a store, there's this pretty girl, this lady telling you if you want to buy this, and she offers you a chocolate, and so on. And that's how you work harder, that's why you buy, you don't stop consuming. So capitalism has become much more sophisticated in the forms of control, and technology is much more sophisticated than it was before. So I think that that's why I believe, some friends in Brazil and some anarchist people, that we learn a lot reading Foucault and Deleuze, because even though they didn't call themselves anti-feminists, but let's talk about, this is what I would like to stress, Foucault and Deleuze, even though they never call themselves anarchists, we think they were anarchists, because the way they think, So Foucault constructed a theory of, that is challenging power all the time. So he showed us that power, so something that anarchists knew, but he showed theoretically, he had a theory to show that, a language, how power is not concentrated in the state. It's not enough to destroy the state. Power relations are here, are everywhere, are inside of us. So, for instance, the obedience. You learn to obey. And the ideal of the citizen up to some years ago, the ideal of a citizen was the obedient worker, the productive worker, the docile body. So I like it. I think that when Foucault says that capitalism wants to produce the docile body, I think he's absolutely right. So this is our notion of citizenship that is completely different from the notion of citizenship that you find in the Greek period, in the ancient times. So that's why he decided to study the ancient times, the Greek civilization. Because he said they also have this idea of citizenship, but it doesn't mean that the boy, the young one, has to learn how to obey. On the opposite, to be a citizen means that you will be capable of defining the life, the kind of life you want for yourself, the kind of subjectivity you want, who you want to be. Because the Greeks, they didn't have this notion that we were born to be I don't know what. Since the very beginning, this was absolutely odd for them. They don't even have this notion of the inner self. They don't believe in inner self. They believe that you work on yourself and that in relation to others. So I can only be a friend, friendship. I can only build friendship and be a friend if I have someone to be friend of. So I'm generous if I'm generous to someone else. So. You can be generous to yourself, but it's something that you build yourself, you construct yourself, you produce yourself in relationships, not isolatedly. So he says that for the Greeks, the care of the self was fundamental, because it was a way of working on your subjectivity, and the care of the self also meant the care for the others. So it's the opposite of what we learned. We have learned. We have learned in our world, in the leftist groups. I won't say even in the Catholic religious groups also. So I don't know. It's a Western conception that you have to forget yourself. So if you talk too much about yourself, we will think that you are a narcissist, right? It's narcissism. So the idea is that you had, and for instance, in Marxism, you had to forget yourself absolutely. You had to be a revolutionary, and a revolutionary meant what? That you had to be a proletarian. So you have to dress like a proletarian, you have to eat like a proletarian, you have to like the culture of the proletarian. And sometimes it didn't work. Well, most of the time it didn't work, if you're not. So, because it's too artificial. So, and it means that you have to renounce yourself, your desire, and you can renounce your desire, your interest, your will, your, I don't know, interest for some time, but not for the, you explode. So I think that, so Foucault understood, studied that in the Greeks, that they believe that you don't have to forget yourself. On the opposite, you have to be aware of yourself. You have to take care of yourself. You have to transform yourself to be able to interfere, to be able to deal with other people in a better way.
So you are saying to me that you are individual, individualist, anarchist.
No. I'm blurring. On the opposite, I'm blurring the division between individual and collective.
So like
because
Max Stirner,
because
Max
this Stirner idea, Max Stirner, and the Greeks, the ancient Greeks. If you go to, certainly the anarchist of the 19th century read the Greek tradition. Certainly, the Stoics, the Cynics. This tradition, Epicurus, Epictetus, of course they did. So we have, and feminism was important in this challenge of the binary opposition. So either you are an artist or you are a scientist. Either you are black or you are white. Either you are a woman or a man. Either you are all these definitions. Feminism and other kind of thinkings like Foucault and Deleuze, they have challenged this. So we don't have to decide that because I'm talking about the self, I'm individualist. And because you're talking about the other, you're collectivist. No. The Greeks, they didn't work like that. So on the opposite, they believed that the individual was constituted in the collective. How can you imagine an individual out of society? This is a liberal conception that says that you are free when you get free of everybody, when you do whatever you like. So an anarchist will do the opposite. They will say freedom is social. Anarchists won't say freedom is individual. They will say freedom is social. So I am much freer if you are free too, if you are free, if everybody's free. See, if I live in a freer society, I will become much more free. So freedom doesn't mean, like we say in Brazil, my freedom starts where yours stops. Ends. A minha liberdade começa quando a tua termina. Is that the translation?
Yes, yes.
You have this too in English. My freedom stops where yours. No, my freedom begins where yours stops. Mm-hmm. So this is false. This is a liberal conception of freedom. So it's the opposite. We are much more free if much more people are free, of course. And as we lived in a dictatorship, we know that very well. We know the damage dictatorship has done to us. And so many decades that we didn't know anybody, that we didn't know. We had no contact with other groups because of dictatorship. So now that the country has changed and we knew what happened, we are knowing our history much better. We understand the limits of that. Well, I would like to talk to you more about Foucault and Deleuze and this idea of arts of living, the Greeks. So I'm just going to tell you this, and you, if you are interested, you Google and you try to find. Arts of living, the Greeks had, just 1 minute and I'll stop.
You go to talk about something that don't represent Brazil.
I think it does because, as I told you, French tradition is very strong in Brazil. Foucault's books are translated in Portuguese. Deleuze, we have many international conferences on Foucault and Deleuze, and these anarchist groups are writing, trying to renew anarchism. So I'm talking of something that is recent, of course. I'm talking of ideas that I would say they are from the 90s, from the 90s now to the present, to nowadays. This effort to conceptualize also anarchism, I think this is important. And to understand this that I'm talking, I think you have to understand the notion of arts of living. So the Greeks had this idea that we have to work on our lives. We have to create a beautiful life to be beautiful. We have to be beautiful. And who is beautiful? The citizen. Who is the citizen? The politician who works in the polis. And what is the meaning of being beautiful? It's being temperate. Temperate, balanced. So the idea of balanced is not that you control yourself, the rational part of yourself control your emotional and instinctive part and repress it. But it's that you have a balance, so you don't have to repress pleasure as we do in our society. For instance, if you are in love with someone of your own sex, so you should repress this because this would be homosexuality, and homosexuality is pathology. So the Greeks considered the opposite, that you don't have to repress yourself because you know about yourself. The truth of yourself is in yourself. You know yourself. You have to, but you can't be a slave of yourself. For instance, someone who is a drunk, a alcoholic, he is a slave of himself because his instinctive part or emotional is under control, is out of control, out of control. So he has to be on control of himself. But we also say that in modern times nowadays. But it does. But it's completely different what we mean by that. When we say we have to be in control of ourselves, we mean we have to repress our desire and pleasure. And the Greeks said the opposite. We have to have pleasures. They are important in our lives, but we have to have the control of it. And so the beautiful life was lived by the beautiful individual had a beautiful life. And this was possible because of this work, the technologies of the self, the practice of the self. Well, what does it have to do with anarchism? It has to do that nowadays, when you look at our society, who is smart in controlling, repressing, denying ourselves, you have to be the body of the model, Gisele Bündchen. In Brazil, this is awful for women, you know? We have to be beautiful. Fortunately, I'm getting older, so I'm getting free of this. But for young women, it's a pressure. You have to have the body of the advertisings and so on. So all the time you have to be someone that you're not. You have to forget yourself and be who? What are the counter movements, counter ideas to this neoliberal world? Anarchism. So that's why I think anarchism has to open to think about feminist issues, body issues, gender issues, queer issues, I don't know what issues. Because these are the issues of contemporary world. And our anarchism has to have answers to this, to black issues, to all issues, race issues. So we think we are doing work trying to show how anarchism has developed these arts of living following the Greek tradition. Because all these famous classical anarchists, they read these authors. They read Epicurus, they read Epictetus, they read the Greeks. They learned with them. So there is an anarchist doctrine that is embedded and rooted in our good tradition, but that is forgotten. For instance, if I tell you, do you know the meaning of subjection? To being dominated, right? To being produced, to being dominated. This is a practice of subjection. But if I tell you, do you know the meaning of subjectivation? Subjectivization. If I ask you, do you know the meaning of rhetorics? You know rhetorics. But if I ask you, do you know the meaning of parhesia? And they are all in our tradition. They are all in the books of history. If you go to the ancient, they are there. So what's the difference? So Foucault says, rhetorics is the art of talking, of speaking. So you can, a lawyer can be favor or can be against, and he will have arguments. It depends on who pays, right? If he's defending someone, but if he gets some more money, he will be against. And he will develop arguments and blah. So this is rhetoric, the art of speaking very well. Parhesia is free speech in a situation of danger. For instance, those people who were arrested, who went to prison in dictatorship because they they spoke what they shouldn't, what the dictators didn't want them to speak. So they practiced parhesia. They were parhesiasts. And who was the most important parhesiast in the Greek tradition? Socrates. How did Socrates die? He had to take the poison, right? Because he said, no, I'm not going to say the opposite. I'm going to say what I think. I want to be true to myself. So this truth-telling in a situation of risk is called parhesia. P-A-R-R-E-S-I-A. Go to the Google this, but Google with Foucault. Because if you Google it in the dictionary, you have another explanation. Yes?
I believe it's spelled with H.
I beg your pardon? H, yes. Aga, H?
P-A-R-H.
P-A-R, okay. R, H, E, S, I, A. Yes. In English, in the Greek word, you have H.
Yeah, there's a journal.
Yes. Ah, fantastic. Fantastic. Okay, you will. Okay, I can stop and.
Because you have 30 minutes to see and talk. Maybe you want to make some questions.
Yes. Okay. No, you have 10 now.
We have about 15 minutes left.
Yeah, 15.
So if you have any questions, please feel free.
No. Three. So he started. Oh, I thought you want to add questions?
Go for it. What's it? Go.
Okay. I really thought your talk was amazing. Like, I feel like.
Can you speak a little bit louder?
I feel like you're speaking for so many people, and like how you talk about like discovering these buried and erased traditions that really were there in so many different countries. And
yes.
I agree with you with Deleuze and Foucault, and also I think the big thing like with Deleuze and Guattari's work is questioning the overall conceptual substructure of hierarchy that underlies everything that Western philosophy seems to think. And they're just like, no, not hierarchy. Why should we think hierarchy? Why do we take hierarchy for granted? And that, I think, is what identified them to me as anarchists. I mean, maybe they didn't call themselves that, but they questioned that just underlying. Like, no one says, like, oh, you know, it must be thought hierarchically for this reason,
yes,
for that reason.
Okay.
Hierarchy is never really justified in that whole philosophical tradition. I think that Deleuze and Guattari, I mean, it may be my ignorance, but I think that they're one of the few philosophers that have really taken that apart and, like, look at alternatives and find that infinitely valuable.
I was trying to show that in some of our groups, anarchist groups in Brazil, Foucault and Deleuze have been very important thinkers.
Yeah.
Because it's like they give us tools to understand the forms of domination, of control in our society, and the possible ways out. And so I was trying to explain that some groups in Brazil connect these two authors, but they are strong in Brazil. I know that Foucault, he, for instance, if you go to Colombia, nobody wants to hear about Foucault. They don't like Foucault. Only some philosophers. Of course, you have John Reichman, but if you go to these the many other departments, he can tell you that.
There was a whole like cultural battle over quote-unquote French theory, like the right.
Yes. But talking about Brazil, in Brazil, the French theory is strong. You know?
Colonization.
You can call colonization, but for us, they are very inspired. You can say that Bakunin is a strange. Bakunin is not a Brazilian. How do you call this colonization? Bakunin, Malatesta, they are foreigners too, but this is colonization. Well, but the thing is, in Brazil, they are strong. And for us, it's like they provide us tools to think about anarchism in a different way.
I'm sorry, but I'd like to hear about Guattari. I understand he did some work in Brazil.
So, sorry, cool. we have a few more questions. So maybe afterwards,
okay,
if you want
to. No, but it's. I think there is a confusion about it.
He's talking about Guattari.
He's talking about Guattari. Guattari was absolutely important with Deleuze too.
Yeah, that's what he was.
He was. I didn't hear. Guattari, Felix Guattari was. He came to Brazil many times and he worked with Deleuze. He wrote books with Deleuze. So, and they were absolutely famous because of this thing of the desire of, and it was during dictatorship that he came to Brazil. So all this French theory was absolutely important, not only for anarchists. So they were important in the country. And it was a country fighting against dictatorship and anarchists in the midst of all these groups. So I wouldn't say that anarchists were the most important. No, there were many, many groups, feminist groups, anarchist groups, socialist groups, blah, blah, blah. And groups with no individuals, with no labels. But anyway, I think we understood that the fight against the construction of a new world is not something targeted at the state only, and not only on the public sphere, but it has to do with your subjectivity too. So this notion that either you talk about individual or you talk about the collective is false. So we understood that we have to change ourselves in order to change the world too. You're doing all of this. Well, I'm very happy that last Wednesday, we had a meeting at Colombia with a feminist from Guatemala. And she was talking about the feminist movement in Guatemala. And it was wonderful what she did, the work they are doing with these prisoners, women in jail and out of jail, so everywhere. They have this political school. And they were thinking that they have to forget what they learned. They have to unlearn. She said this word, unlearn. Because we learn to be obedient. We learn to forget ourselves. We learn to be guilty. So we are guilty persons. So how can you be creative when you are guilty? How can you be creative, as anarchists say, we have to create, if you are obedient? So when you are obedient, you are repeating what somebody told you to say. You are eating what somebody told you to eat. So an anarchist can't be obedient. Well, it's true, because if you're supposed to create a new world, so there is a regime of truth imposed on us, and we have to challenge it inside, outside, subjectively, politically, it doesn't matter. So I don't think it's only a fight on the political ground, on the public sphere. It's everything now. Well, he has a question.
Why don't we take a couple and then you can answer.
I have sort of a question about the broader political context. It seems like every couple of years in Brazil since the 1970s, somebody would say Brazil is the country of the future in a geopolitical sense. Now, they always say that, never came true, but now it looks like they might be with them, might maybe joining the Security Council and whatever. And with Lula, it seems like a sort of synthesis emerged in the fact that he was an avowed socialist, but he was sort of managing a burgeoning capitalist state. And now you have Lula sort of taking that same project a little bit further. So given the fact that Brazil is on the rise and becoming a more powerful country in Latin America, but also more broadly to Haiti too now, I was wondering what you thought the prospects for a renewed anarchism were.
Okay, and Dave Paul.
Very good question. Well, more of a comment than a question. You spoke highly of Foucault, and as being a Black American, we too have a strong link to Foucault in the French school because of the bringing up of the other and those in the margin and questioning the canopic system. So for me and my training, I find it very valid because in order to look at those things from a person who was a privileged subject people, and before that Sartre, who worked with David Guar, I find it very valid that you use that binary comparison to thread it. And a lot of people stray away from Foucault because of the patriarch, da da da. But if it wasn't for questioning these notions of class, structure, obedience through faith and blind faith, it wouldn't hold the candle to, I think I'm glad you brought it up and used that as your lens.
And I'm glad that you commented like that, because you explained better than me. Also because you speak English better than me. But not only. Thank you.
Any questions, comments? Yes.
I guess you mentioned a bit about the conditions of sort of like totalitarian regimes, and it's the Montessori school in Rome came out under the fascist regime of Mussolini and Vasily Calvin Freire, and I wondered, one, if you would talk a bit about the state of critical pedagogy as it's actually practiced.
Yes, sir. Critical pedagogy, Freire.
Like,
Paulo Freire.
Is there any schooling like actually happening on the ground, or is it mostly an academic concern? And also, I wondered if you had any ideas about the movement Santiera, the Lens peasant movement, as they're related to Deleuze's concept of the nomad.
No.
Last one. Last question.
The historical feminist anarchist that you. Just to say a little bit about her, if you want.
The historical feminists in Brazil.
The feminist anarchists.
The women in anarchists.
Yeah.
So his question. Let me see. I don't know. I think that you have a very good idea, interpretation of Brazil, and I think yes, Brazil is on the rise. It's surprising, because I realize it much more being the States than being Brazil, because Brazilians are critics of themselves all the time. They say that everything is awful in the country, the violence. So nobody says, in Brazil, nobody says you're on the rise. And when I came here, the first lecture I heard was called Brazil on the Rise. And the second one was the New Brazil. I said, oh my God. So, and I had come from a lecture that was the end of Europe. So one day I had the end of Europe, and the next day I had the New Brazil. I said, oh my God. So I realized you're on the rise, being here much more than being there, because of that. Because Brazilians, I don't know, everybody says awful things about Brazil, in Brazil. Everything is wrong in Brazil. Everybody complains, and nobody says, well, look at our anarchist movement, how interesting. Nobody says, don't say, anarchism is not interesting, nothing is happening, there is nothing going on in the country, isn't it? So Brazilians are like that, I don't know. But I think Argentinians, I heard an Argentinian speaking yesterday, he's much more depressed. The image of Argentina he presented was awful. So we said, well, Argentina is not like that. But coming to Brazil, as democracy grows and becomes stabilized, I think that the opportunity of anarchist groups to grow is, of course, much bigger. But I think that anarchism has a challenge much bigger, because it's much more difficult to challenge a democracy than dictatorship. And it's completely different from the United States, because you had never had dictatorship. And on the other hand, you have Ku Klux Klan and all these Ku Klux Klan sections, like the Ku Klux Klan section abortion. I saw on TV, because see this, look how different we are. In Brazil, abortion is prohibited, condemned, illegal. But in the United States, it's legal. But you have anti-abortion movement that kills doctors who practice abortion. In Brazil, nobody will kill the doctor or the woman who did the abortion, even though it's illegal, because everybody does. And everybody is quiet about it. Nobody says anything. But nobody kills. It's not like that, you know. So the violence here is, it's amazing for us who look at U.S. To the United States, to the government, as violent only to foreign countries, but not inside the country. And it's not true. See what happened in New Orleans. When I visited New Orleans, the people there said, you know why we had this Katrina? Because of the army. Because the army had to build the dikes. In this level, very low, and they build it very high because they didn't want to spend much money each time. So that was how they explained the Katrina. Well, And so I think the challenge is, because we in Brazil, we are happy that we have a democracy, because we had the experience of a dictatorship. And you know, for instance, yesterday, it was in the internet, there's a soap opera going on TV in Brazil, and you know that soap opera in Brazil are very important. Everybody watches. Yeah, it's very important, everybody watches. At 8 o'clock, everybody's there. So in this channel, the opera is on the guerrilla, the Araguaia guerrilla, a history that nobody wanted to tell, that the state made all the efforts to eliminate of the books of the memory, of the national memory. And so there is a soap opera on TV telling the story of what happened in the Araguaia River, this part of the central of Brazil, where the army killed all the activists. Only some were left. And they are still fighting against this story because the state didn't want to recognize that they massacred these activists in 1972. It was from 1966 to 1974 or 75, but they killed everybody in 1972. They went there like 20,000 soldiers to kill like 100 activists, 26, 24 years old. But some of them escaped, like famous feminists in Brazil now. And one of them went, so they had this soap opera. Suddenly the soap opera stops and one survivor comes and says, I am 60 years old, I was 20 at that time, I was a political prisoner, I'm a survivor from the Araguaia guerrilla, and they tortured me, and to torture me, they put me naked all the time. They did shocks, electrical shocks, how do you say shocks? Shocks? In my vagina, in anus, in the ears, on TV, yesterday. So you understand? So for us, democracy is something very important that is happening in the country, because all this past, all these stories, that these are wounds that are still, they haven't been healed. So they're still hurting, and they have to be talked, they have to be, people must know that stories. And there are bodies that are missing, there are people that, the families that are fighting. So last year, see this, December 16th, Brazil was condemned by the Inter-American Court of Human Rights in Costa Rica to recognize the massacre of Araguaia, to pay the families, and to help to find the bodies. So the army is helping to try to find the bodies, the missing bodies. Because the army killed, thrown from the airplane, killed in very brutal ways. So this fight is going on right now. I don't think that anarchists are engaged as, I don't know if they could. Sometimes we ask, we demand of people much more than they can do. I think we as anarchists and as feminists, we are trying to do our best. We are trying to do our best. But there are so many things to do and it's so difficult. So it would be very good if we could be engaged in all of these issues and we could be talking about this. But unfortunately, we are not everywhere and we are not so many. So I don't know. I was answering him. No? I don't know what is the future for anarchism in Brazil. But I think there is much more space than it had before. Even because we are more articulated. And, well, Paulo Freire is absolutely important. I think that Paulo Freire, you know. But some anarchists criticize Paulo Freire. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know, maybe I'm older, I belong to another generation, and I think we can destroy people like Paulo Freire, who invented such a... How would you qualify it? I could call it an anarchist pedagogy. But some anarchists say no, it's a disciplining method. So I wouldn't say that. And besides, he became famous in all Latin America, so many groups took advantage of his theories. And in Brazil, he's absolutely respected, of course. So you will find many groups still talking about Paulo Freire, developing his pedagogy. All the leftist movements in Brazil were based in his pedagogy, in his methods. So I think he was a really revolutionary man in education. And finally, the anarchist women.
Oh, I don't know. Question about nomad, the notion of nomad and the Black Lives Matter.
Well, I really don't. I would have to have more contact with the MST to know about nomadism in MST. But I know that Deleuze has become much more important in Brazil each time, each year. You know, so this idea of nomadism, of a rhizome. I think is spread out in the country. So young people know that. So if you go to the important university, maybe they will say Deleuze. But if you go to anarchist groups, to young groups, to feminist groups, they have read Deleuze. They know this idea of connection and this critique of a hierarchy. I think, because I think that the critique of hierarchy in Brazil goes beyond anarchism. No. It's not only anarchist groups that are criticized. I think because of the fight against dictatorship, so all notion, all power relations were involved, you know. So we started criticizing the military, but we were also criticizing the schools, the doctors, the father, the family. So so there was this feminist movement and then the gay movement. So I think suddenly there was so many groups challenging hierarchy, and so I think we have been building a very interesting society. So I don't know if I'm missing too much my country because I'm far away. Yeah, but it's true. But I love Brazil, and before coming to the United States, I was thinking if I had a chance, would I live abroad?
How you can say to you? I say no. Africa, Brazil, don't have space.
I understand, but they are starting. Yes, I know we have all these
Asian
difficulties. I'm thinking that I disagree, because I think that all countries have problems.
All the countries, you know. Yes. Brazil is the great unjust society you have in Brazil before China.
Yes, I think we have all these problems, and I think you are absolutely right. You are right.
I have some problems.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not saying we don't have problems in Brazil. I think you didn't. Just a minute. I think you didn't understand me. I didn't say that we don't have problems. I said we have many problems. As the United States have many problems, as China has many problems, as the world has many problems. But I think we are dealing with these problems in a very interesting way. This is what I say. Yes. I think that we have a very strong feminist movement that is changing the country. I think it is. But look at the States. Look at the States. You had a much more important feminist movement.
No,
the society is much more conservative.
We have to be clear. What is the anarchist?
I think we're going to wrap up now, and then if you want to talk about it, I'm sorry. Ma'am, this is just rude at this point. Please.
Well, thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.